fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey everybody, happy Monday. We're in ordinary time now. We will have an extraordinary show for you today, I hope. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Toll free to talk to me on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You can also email the program, C-A-L-E, Cale at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Man, so much to get to, so much to talk about. You know me, later in the show, I will tell you what I thought about the incredible, improbable events that happened in Las Vegas last night, in case you missed it. But I want to start off with something else today. I want to start off with the final frontier, space, and specifically somebody who is really invested in more ways than one in hopefully getting you and me there one day to Mars. Forget about to the moon, to Mars. I'm talking about Elon Musk. I'm talking about the richest man in the world. I am talking about the CEO of Tesla and also of SpaceX. And that's one of his missions. And I have to tell you, I'm going to talk about this in a little bit as well. Whether or not it's a good idea for us to go to Mars is an open question. But I kind of have a little bit of a better understanding now about why Elon wants to do it and why he thinks it's important. So I've kind of softened my stance on that a little bit. But we're going to talk about ethics in space. Is it possible to love God and neighbor in space? Yep. Yep, you have to. The laws of the universe still apply there. Space is part of the universe, right? So we'll chat about that later on. But once again, that phone number to call, 1-888-914-9149, if you want to call in and react to anything that you're going to hear on the program today. But the reason why specifically I wanted to bring up Elon today is because he recently appeared in an interview with the satire website known as the Babylon Bee. I love the Bee. You probably do too. The Bee is hilarious. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. I mean, it's satire. It's funny. Now, the guys who run the Babylon Bee are evangelical Christians. Now, when they interviewed Elon Musk, it was a pretty lighthearted interview the whole way through. But towards the very end of the interview, things took a pretty serious turn. And I think they tried to do it in a funny way, but it was about a very serious topic. It was about salvation and about Jesus Christ. And so there were a lot of topics that the Bee folks covered with Musk. And on the interview, it was kind of Musk sitting at a table along with the CEO of the Babylon Bee, Seth Dillon, also the editor-in-chief, Kyle Mann, and their creative director, Ethan Nicole. They talked about politics. They talked about the wealthy. They talked about all kinds of different things. And just at the end of the interview, they mentioned that the interview took place on a Sunday, so Musk was kind of joking, why aren't you guys in church? And they're like, oh, we went to Zoom church. Ha, 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 ha. Obviously, you know, not necessarily a sacramental worldview, but he said, oh, you guys are going to double hockey sticks, said Musk, because you're not in church on Sunday. They're kind of joking around. It's all pretty lighthearted. But then there was a very serious question lobbed at Musk about eternal salvation. Here's the clip.
We're wondering if you could do us a quick solid and accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior.
On real the quick. Show.
Personal Lord and Savior. It's a quick prayer.
I mean, let's just say, like, I agree with the principles that Jesus advocated. There's great wisdom in the teachings of Jesus, and I agree with those teachings. And things like turn the other cheek are very important, because as opposed to an eye for an eye, an eye for an eye leaves everyone blind. So forgiveness, you know, is important, and treating people as you would wish to be treated. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Very important.
So it's like a 60-70% yes?
As Einstein would say, I believe in the God of Spinoza. But hey, if you know, if Jesus is saving people, I mean, I wouldn't stand in his way. You know, like, I'll be sure, I'll be saved. Why not?
Sweet, we did it.
Yeah.
I think he just said yes.
We got him. All right, we got him.
We got some water back to be saved. Sounds good.
You want to get baptized or anything?
Yeah. I was baptized.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anglican.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's done.
Okay. I don't know what you guys think of this. I'd love to hear your take on this. There's sort of surprise question to Elon Musk. You can call in right now. 1-888-914-9149 is toll free line to call to talk to me on the Cale Clark Show. And in case you just tuned in while we were playing that clip, that was a clip from an interview with the satire website, the Babylon Bee. They were interviewing Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla. And SpaceX obviously wants to put people on Mars. And so, again, I have to kind of laugh at this. When Musk was asked, we were wondering if you could do us a quick solid and accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. It's just a quick prayer, just a quick prayer. And of course, what they're referring to there is the famous sinner's prayer. I don't know if this has ever been asked of you. It's certainly been asked of me. I spent about 10 years outside the Catholic Church in the evangelical world, so I kind of know about this. And not every evangelical Christian would use this methodology, this concept of the sinner's prayer. And the basic concept is that you pray a prayer, admit you're a sinner, admit Jesus is the Savior, ask him to quote-unquote come into your heart, and then you're quote-unquote saved. Now, again, it's a bit of a caricature because not all Protestants believe this by any stretch of the imagination, but a lot of people do. They think that it's kind of a one-and-done situation. Your eternal salvation is assured if you pray this prayer, the sinner's prayer, eternal salvation. You can't lose it. You can't fall away. Well, you can. We in the Catholic Church know that. There is such a thing as mortal sin. You can commit a very deadly sin and cut off that flow of God's grace, just like shutting off the tap cuts the supply of God's grace flowing through your life. And so you got to go to confession and get it back. In so many ways, the sacrament of confession is really an extension of baptism. We just celebrated the feast yesterday of the baptism of the Lord. And the fact that baptism washes away not only original sin, but any actual sins committed up to that point in a person's life. Well, there's an extension of that, which is called the sacrament of confession later in life. But anyways, we know about that, but a lot of people deny that. And I do think that the editors of the Bee, the Babylon Bee, were using a lot of humor here to try to make a serious point. And as G.K. Chesterton once said, that famous convert to Catholicism, famous wit, he once said, humor can get in under the door while seriousness is still fumbling at the handle. I really like that line. Humor can get in under the door while seriousness is still fumbling at the handle. That's what G.K. Chesterton said. I say this every time. He would have been great on Twitter if he were alive today. Twitter was made for, and there's a lot of G.K. Chesterton Twitter accounts as well that people have where they post his sayings, like that one. And it's true. I do think that with humor, you can slip a lot of truth under the door of people's lives. They might not be open to hearing the gospel or hearing more about Jesus Christ or serious matters. But if you can do it through humor, and comedians are really good at this, you can slip in a lot of truth there. Same with music. Because when you're listening to music or when you're listening to a comedian, listening to something funny, listening to a joke, your guard is down a little bit naturally, and so you're not as defensive. And just think about how quickly kids can memorize song lyrics. Wow, it's kind of dangerous because it cuts both ways, right? Think about all the songs that we memorized as kids. Ooh, some of them weren't that great necessarily, stuff we heard on the radio. Who listens to the radio anymore? But you know what I'm talking about. So I do think they were using a little bit of humor to smuggle in a serious question to Elon Musk. But I part of me feels like he was a little bit ambushed in that interview. And I think it's possible that Elon was, in a sense, kind of dismissing in a very, very, very polite way what they're all about. As far as I know, Elon Musk is an atheist, but he was baptized. He did say that in the interview. So the irony is that Elon, if and we're assuming his baptism is legit, there's no reason to doubt it. there's no reason to assume that it's not a legitimate baptism. We will assume that he was baptized with water, not Molson Canadian or something like that, or Coca-Cola, and in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. So it's a valid baptism, unless it can be proven otherwise. So in that sense, Elon Musk is actually a Christian. If he's been rightly baptized, he is a Christian. But if he doesn't believe anymore, he's obviously fallen away from the faith. So he needs to reactivate that, as it were. So from some of his answers, he quotes Einstein and things like that, saying, "I believe in the God of Spinoza." I don't know much about Spinoza, but I don't think he was a Catholic. But might have been a pantheist. But having said that, Elon knows what the Babylon Bee guys are all about. He knows that they're all about satire, and I think he finds them very funny. And I think in a sense, he might have been kind of humoring them, kind of being polite. But on the other hand, I do think he was engaging respectfully with their question, because he obviously is pretty familiar with the teachings about Jesus that Jesus Christ offered. He did have some very clear thoughts on the teaching of Jesus. He talked about, I like the way that Musk put this when he said that Jesus taught turn the other cheek. That's very important, as opposed to an eye for an eye. An eye for an eye, he said, leaves everyone blind. That's what Musk said. Hey, that's a pretty good preacher's line. I'll have to steal that one. He talked about Jesus' teachings on forgiveness, treating others as you would want to be treated. That's the golden rule. And Jesus' version of the golden rule, by the way, is way, way more challenging than what other religions teach. Because other religions teach, people want to say, oh, the golden rule is in every religion. Not quite, because most other religions, it's a version of don't do to other people what you don't want them to do to you. If you don't want them to steal your stuff, then don't steal their stuff. Okay, fine. But Jesus' teaching on this is much more challenging. It's much more open-ended, because he says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's much more, requiring a lot more thought, a lot more effort, and really getting yourself personally involved. So Musk is pretty familiar at some level with the teaching of Jesus. He said there's some great wisdom in his teachings, and I agree with those teachings. And he also said this. Musk said, quote, "Hey, if Jesus is saving people, I mean, I won't stand in his way. Sure, I'll be saved. Why not?" End of quote. And then the Babylon Bee hosts say, "Oh, I think he just said yes." And again, I don't think that they necessarily think he's being serious either, but it could be that Musk is sort of playing Pascal's wager here and saying, hey, why not? It mitigates risk. You know, if the gospel is really true, then, hey, if I accept it, then I gain everything. So if it's not true, I lose nothing. It's possible that he's thinking that. But again, I think a lot of him was just simply being polite here. I want to hear what you think about this. Did they corner him? Did they corner him? That's another question. That's another good question. At some level, I feel like this was kind of, maybe a cheap way to get some clicks from the Christian community. Oh, look, we preach the gospel to Elon Musk. I think asking him that question in a public interview, it's going to be on YouTube, it's going to be public, it's going to be on their podcast. I don't know. Like, I mean, if you're really interested in the person's soul, why not try to do it one-on-one as a friend? Why not try to do it behind the scenes? Why try to make them try to come up with a public confession? I don't know. I just don't think that kind of decision can ever be made under pressure, number one, certainly not under public pressure. It has to be well considered. It's a big decision. It's the biggest decision you'll ever make in your life. And so I don't know. I do think that they cornered him a little bit. I think they were serious about it. I think they are seriously concerned for the guy's soul. I don't doubt their integrity on that front at all. I think they do want to help this guy find Jesus, and I think they were trying to keep it light. The whole program was kind of humorous. They're all about humor, but I do think that there is serious concern for Musk's eternal soul under the surface. And again, I've talked about celebrity conversions many times on this show, and I mean, everyone's soul is important. Celebrities have eternal souls as well. And it is, they do have, if they do convert, they have an incredible opportunity to reach an untold number of people with the gospel. I just imagine the influence that Elon Musk could have if he became a practicing Catholic, let's say, a daily mass attender. Imagine that. Imagine that. Because people would take notice. People would take notice, and a lot of people would consider the faith who might not otherwise want to check it out. Now, the faith wouldn't be true because Elon Musk accepts it, of course, but there is some influence there. But again, there's a lot of danger involved in celebrity conversions as well, because if people are pinning their hopes on, well, I'm going to believe because this guy did or this person did, and then that celebrity then falls into sin or abandons the faith later on, then they can be shattered. So our faith, our trust, our hope has to be in Jesus Christ, obviously himself. But did they corner him? I don't know. I kind of feel like they did. And I don't know, but maybe it was just gentle prodding. Maybe it was just gentle prodding, hoping that they'll sort of plant some seeds in the mind of Elon Musk, maybe get him thinking about these things. Maybe he'll come back to it later in private. I'm not sure, really sure what they were thinking there, but I did think it was a fascinating interview. And I do think that it did raise a lot of questions about what's the best way to share the gospel with others. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to take a little break here, but I want to tease something that's coming up. Elon wants to send people to Mars. At first, I didn't think this was a great idea, but I'm starting to warm up to it. But should we get there? If you and I are driving rovers, I guess they'd be Tesla rovers, around Mars, are we going to be subject to the laws of morality? What are the ethics of living in space? It might be sooner than we think. We need to talk about this. It's the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Just before the break, we were talking about Elon Musk's appearance on the Babylon Bee interview. They kind of cornered him with a question about faith. Do you accept Jesus as your savior? I want to hear what you think about that. Was it cringeworthy? Was it not? 888-914-9149. Going to go to the phones right now. Todd is calling from O'Fallon, Illinois. Is that the home of Jimmy Fallon? O'Fallon? No, probably not. But anyways, Todd, are you on the air? Are you there? Todd is away from the phone. Maybe he is indisposed. I don't know. Hopefully he'll come back, Todd, because want to hear from you. It was a good question that you had. But what do you think about this, Lucas? Do you feel like Musk was cornered by these guys? What?
Yeah. So if you watch this video, I mean, my reaction was like, it was awkward. It was awkward, Cale. Like, you could tell that Musk was like visibly uncomfortable when they asked him that question, because it was hard to discern if they were joking or if they were serious.
That's right. Yeah, when you're dealing with a bunch of satire guys, it's like,
yeah, it's like, it was just super awkward, and I was just like cringing while I was watching it, and I was just like, what's he gonna say? Like, because he's like, can you do me a solid and accept Jesus? And it's like, what? Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I get, sure, if somebody. Well, the other thing I thought about, though, when you're talking about from a standpoint of evangelization is, like, you know, they were asking if he would accept Jesus as his personal savior, while also, like, just the entirety of the gospel wasn't there, though. It's like, what are you being saved from? And it's like, if you came up to me and you did something, like, really nice, and you're like, hey, Lucas, here's this candy bar. Do you want it? And I'm like, sure, like, I guess. They're like, why not? If it's a candy bar, sure, I guess I'll take it. I don't really know anything about it that much, but I guess I'll take it. And then, but you don't tell me that if I don't eat it, I'm going to die. And it's like,
yeah,
that piece of the puzzle is completely missing. And so it's like, he kind of, now again, it's kind of tongue in cheek. The context is a satirical media outlet. So you got to take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, at the end of the day, they did share it a little bit, and maybe it will plant some seeds, and he'll come back and say to himself, you know, I haven't thought about these things in a really long time, since I was a kid. Maybe I'll consider Christianity more seriously. So, who knows?
Yeah, well, And maybe when he gets to Mars, he'll kind of look at the stars and say, yeah. one of the first astronauts did that. He wrote a book called To Rule the Night. I forget which guy this was, but he talked about the spiritual impact it had on him going to the moon and just looking down and, you know, and that's from the book of Genesis, cool. Obviously, one star to rule the night, which was, of course, the moon, as we know, not really a star, but you get the point. All right, Todd is back. Todd called in, had some cell phone trouble. Todd from O'Fallon, Illinois. Hey, Todd, what's your take on all this?
Can you hear me all right?
I sure can. Yeah, go ahead.
Excellent. Yeah, so thank you. I listened to your, I haven't heard the Babylon Bee interview, but I had listened to your excellent summary of it and the clip that you played from it. And I thought back to some media training I had many years ago. One of the ways that media trainers characterize that kind of question is one of two ways. One way is as a landmine question, where the interviewer puts your foot on the landmine, and then now you can't. No matter where you move, you're liable to blow up. The second way is kind of a quicksand question, where you find yourself standing in quicksand, and the more you try to wiggle, the deeper you get into it. So I thought that Mr. Musk did a pretty darn good job of responding without reacting. And now will he give them another shot? I doubt it, and I wouldn't mind.
I doubt it too. I think you're right. I like how you put that: landmine questions and quicksand questions. And yeah, I don't think he appreciated that. He probably didn't appreciate being caught off guard. It certainly looked like, and we'll post a link to the interview so you can actually see it. When you look at his reactions, it looked like he was kind of caught flat-footed there, and he wasn't expecting that question. And I think in general,
part of that's on him too, for not being more prepared.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, he's got to know who these guys are and where they're coming from. Right. That's true.
Right. And he can afford the best media people to train him, to prepare him.
Yeah.
sure he's had plenty of media training.
I don't know. The funny thing is his company Tesla has no PR department, which I find unbelievable. I find it absolutely unbelievable. His whole philosophy on that is the product. Yeah. He just thinks the product will speak for itself. The people will figure it out and it's not necessary. I disagree with that.
In a perfect world, I would kind of agree with him, but we all know the world is not even close.
You look at all the misinformation and FUD that's been out there about, you know, Tesla and the media, which is affecting the stock price, sometimes taking wild swings because of it. And there's no response to any of this stuff. I don't know. He's not worried about it, obviously, in the long run, but I think it's interesting.
I was not aware of the interview, and I love your show.
Oh, thank you, Todd. I really appreciate that. You can call back anytime. Great take on that. That was Todd calling from O'Fallon, Illinois. Well, one thing about Elon Musk is that he definitely wants to get humanity to Mars, and I guess he's afraid that some people really are that, you know, a large asteroid might smash into Earth and wipe out all life. One never knows. So he thinks it's important to be interplanetary for a few different reasons. And Musk recently appeared on the Joe Rogan Experience. And it's a total sidebar here, but it's absolutely incredible how Joe Rogan, no matter what you think of this guy, how Joe Rogan is absolutely crushing legacy media with his podcast. It's only available on one platform, Spotify. He signed this deal with Spotify, and a lot of people think it's actually a bad deal despite the mega millions they're paying him. He probably could have done better on his own. I don't know. But having said that, his ratings are absolutely crushing legacy media. I'm talking television. I'm talking CNN. I'm talking cable news. I'm talking radio, everything. It's unbelievable how many people listen to Joe Rogan. I think that I saw like a graph on this. I think he had like 11 million listeners on average or something like that to his last podcast. And CNN pulled in like 3 million or something. So just to get an idea of his influence. Well, he's known for interviewing people like Elon Musk, figures that are notable in society, and just kind of letting them speak their mind and letting the listener, the viewer, decide what they think about these issues. And I think he asked Elon Musk, if memory serves me correctly, when he thought that humanity was going to get to Mars. And Musk thought about this question for a long time, and he said long-term, 10 years. Short-term, I think he said 5 years. So that's interesting. Well, if this is going to happen, and it looks like it is, we need to start thinking about, I hate to say this, but possible Star Wars. I'm talking about space militarization. This is not just in the movies anymore. This is a real possibility. What about the possibilities of encountering extraterrestrial life? Just the other day, another pilot with another video, maybe you saw it, of strange-looking vehicles of some sort in the clouds that looked pretty weird. And it didn't look like it was a doctored video at all. We saw the Air Force guy's video that came out. It was pretty viral recently. And I wish I could be more specific about that. The Air Force guy's video. Yeah, you've all seen that one, right? You know the one I'm talking about. It looked like UFOs. And it was all declassified stuff, real military videos, things that actually happened. Should this affect your faith? That's another question for another day. But we do have to talk about space ethics. And The Pillar, Charlie Camosi from The Pillar, actually interviewed a really interesting guy about this. And his name is Brian Patrick Green, who teaches at Santa Clara University in California. Hey, you know who went to Santa Clara University, Lucas?
Who's that?
Steve Nash.
Oh,
Just saying.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's where the legend started. Anyways, having said that, so this guy, Brian Green, is really interesting. He was he kind of grew up in the 1980s. He was raised nominally Catholic, but he was essentially a practical atheist. But he loved, when he was growing up, he loved watching the Cosmos TV series by Carl Sagan. If you remember that, a lot of people have very fond memories about that. Anyways, he would watch this thing over and over and over again. He wanted to become a scientist. And at the time growing up, and this is a sad misconception that a lot of people have, that science and religion are always going to be at odds. They're irreconcilable. That's obviously not true. A lot of the greatest scientists that have ever lived were Catholics. Father Georges Lemaître, who created the Big Bang Theory, not the TV show, but Chuck Lorre is the guy who did that one. But you know what I'm talking about, the Big Bang Theory of, you know, the cosmology. And that came from a Catholic priest, Father Georges Lemaître. I think most of the craters on the moon are named for Jesuit priest scientists who discovered them or who named them. So there's no such, science just tells us how things work in God's universe, but it doesn't tell us about the why. For that, we have to go to theology. Anyway, so this guy, Brian Green, he thought that science and faith were never going to, you know, he had to pick one or the other. But then he went to a Jesuit high school and he realized that they weren't opposed after all. And then he heard about something called the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. And he kind of kept that in the back of his mind. But he still basically was an atheist. He went to UC Davis, University of California at Davis, and he discovered that he didn't like math enough to be a physicist, and he didn't like lab work enough to be a biologist. So he's like, what am I going to do now? At the same time, he started meeting some very intelligent evangelical Christians. And he started to realize that science could not answer some of the ultimate questions that he had, but Christianity could answer. So he wound up meeting his wife at this point in university, and he joined the Jesuit volunteers and went to a place called the Marshall Islands. I don't know much about the Marshall Islands, but apparently they did a lot of nuclear tests there. And apparently the islands are starting to sink underwater because of climate issues. I don't know. Anyway, so that's what he decided to do. He kept studying, wanted to teach, and eventually got a PhD in ethics. He got 50 job rejections, but eventually so he's pretty humble to admit that. But eventually he was hired by Santa Clara University at their School of Engineering and the Markula Center for Applied Ethics. So it's the applied ethics part I want to talk about when it comes to space, the final frontier, because we're going to get there at some point as humans. Yeah, there you go. Do you have William Shatner's voice on
space,
this?
Space, the final frontier.
My fellow Canadian, William Shatner, who actually did make it to space, by the way, with Jeff Bezos. What do they call that thing? Blue, not Blue Angel, but Blue something. I can't remember. He paid a lot of money to go there, or they paid for him to go there. I don't know, but William Shatner actually did make it kind of to space. Blue Origin, that's what it's called. Jeff Bezos, when he's not frolicking with people on a raft. You probably saw the pictures. He's taking people to space. And by the way, so just to comment really quickly on that part of it, a lot of people think this is all frivolous, this idea of sending rockets to Mars like Elon Musk is doing, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson trying to get people on these spacecraft flights. This is just stuff that billionaires do who have a lot of time, too much money, space tourism. What's the point of this? And I was kind of that mind too. But then I heard this argument from somebody that basically said, don't forget, that's exactly what people said when commercial air flight started. When commercial air flight started, everyone said, this is only going to be for the super rich. This is a waste of time. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources. We should be focusing on building better trains, better automobiles, not this kind of activity. But eventually it became not just for the super rich, it became popularized for everybody and affordable enough for everybody to go. So, and to hear some people talk, you know, we may have to do this to ensure survival of the species. So these are the kinds of questions that Charlie Camosi from The Pillar was asking this guy, Brian Green, who is the director of technology ethics at Santa Clara University. So he has a new book. Brian Green has a new book out called Space Ethics. So he thinks it's all about just kind of reading this interview, some takeaways from this. Brian Green says that this is all about guiding humanity towards a better future, which he sees as a religious requirement of Christianity. I would agree with that. And a lot of the ethics of space have to do with all kinds of things that are already part of Catholic ethics, like just war theory, right? If there are aliens out there and they're not friendly, if it's like Independence Day with Will Smith, we may have to engage in real Star Wars, and they need to be just wars. They need to be just. We can't just take over a planet because we feel like it, right? So, never mind. I'm not even going to go there, but another time. So one of the things that Brian Green says is that human extinction is not something that's a very good concept. It'd be terrible. And Pope Benedict and Pope Francis, both of them have said that the church is above all to protect mankind from self-destruction. That's one of the things Brian Green says. And that happens on a lot of different levels. People can destruct in the moral life. There's a real chance we can wipe out one another with nuclear warfare, with biological warfare. I mean, wow, imagine if somebody weaponized a virus far more dangerous than COVID-19 and its many variants. They're not even done yet. So, yeah, I mean, the prospects are pretty horrifying. And there's lots of Netflix movies about this. So, but this could be a real thing. And so we have to protect mankind from destroying itself. We have to teach people how to live. We've got to preserve humanity and culture. And this guy, Brian Green, in the interview, he made a really interesting analogy, which I had not really ever thought of before. But if you say made a settlement, a human settlement on Mars, it could be a lot like what the monks did in the Middle Ages with monasteries. After all the barbarian wars and all that sort of stuff, how did culture survive? Well, it basically survived with these outposts in the desert where the monks preserved the books, they preserved civilization, they preserved a lot of truth about the faith when the world was being destroyed on the outside. And maybe that's what these space pod civilizations on Mars and other potential planets might do in the end, might preserve our human culture. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. So here's the ultimate point, though. When it comes to space ethics, Brian Green says, look, at the end of the day, you have to ask this question. Why do we even exist right now in the universe? Why are we here? Do we as human beings have a purpose or not? If we have no purpose, then we can really do whatever we want because there's a lot of technology out there and it can be used for either good or ill. So we need ethics. Because if we do have a purpose, and of course you and I believe that we do, then only the choices that we make that can lead us toward fulfilling our purpose can actually be called good, can actually be called good choices. What does the gospel tell us? What does Jesus tell us? Love God, love other people. That when you bottom line it, that's it. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. You got to love yourself too. A lot of people don't do that. You need to love yourself. God loves you. You should love yourself as well. Properly understood. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. But still love yourself. J-O-Y spells joy. One of the ways that we can love God is by learning about God's creation, according to Brian Greene. And lots of religious scientists throughout the ages have followed that approach. But in a way, this idea of exploring space and eventual space settlement is a different way. It's kind of a longer-term way to love your neighbor. You might actually be loving people that you've never met and never will meet because they're going to live in future times by exploring this. Yes, people have immediate needs. There are starving children in different places of the world. There's lots of societal issues that need to be fixed right now that are crying out for help. But we can't not look at the long term as well. So that's really important. And so we actually, when people think about space, they think, this is ridiculous. Let's not look at the heavens. Let's keep our focus on the earth. Don't be so heavenly minded that you're of no earthly good. But don't forget that we are using right now a lot of space technology in everyday life that does help the human person flourish. Think about weather satellites that are out there in space. Another thing that Elon Musk is doing with this, he's sending out these Starlink satellites. So a lot of people are getting their internet. They live in these rural areas and they're getting incredible internet through this Starlink service. Think about satellite navigation, GPS. If you've ever used GPS, guess what? You're depending on space tech for this. There's all kinds of different technologies that are used that help us to love our neighbor better through technological innovation. So we've got to have some ethics involved in that. So anyways, I just thought it was a really fascinating interview. And I think producer Lucas, we'll try to get you to link to this. This was I came out a few days ago with the Pillar, Charlie Camosi, who's an interesting guy in his own right, interviewing Brian Greene. So yeah, we there's a lot of implications here. And another kind of, just before we move on to something else here, I do want to say another interesting thing that he brought up, and we don't really have too much time to explore this, but we'll do another show on this another day. Apparently, statistics show that most people, if you poll people, they actually believe that extraterrestrial life exists right now already. But they say it doesn't affect their faith. That's interesting to me. So most people actually believe in alien life, but they don't think that it has any bearing on their faith. But it does have bearing on other people's faith. In other words, they can't handle it, but I can. You know, if Independence Day happens, I will have no problem with this whatsoever. On one level, it does kind of make some sense because, as Charlie Camosi said in this interview, we already believe in extra human life in the sense that we believe that there are angels, real demons out there. There are supernatural, otherworldly beings in a certain sense already out there floating around. If there is life on other planets, how would that make things any different for us? We still have to deal with this world, right? If there are aliens, that has nothing to do, it doesn't have any bearing on whether or not the gospel is true, on whether or not the incarnation happened, or whether or not Jesus rose from the dead. We still have to deal with all those facts. The facts of the Christian testimony, God interacting in history. There's evidence for this that needs to be dealt with, and that's completely independent of any Independence Day scenario. So, I don't know, just a few stray thoughts on that. But hey, if we get to Mars, we're going to have to deal with all this stuff, right? And we'll deal with some other stuff, though, on the other side of this break. We're going to move on from space and talk about what happened in Vegas last night. And I'm going to tell you that what happened in Vegas is not going to stay in Vegas. We're going to talk about it in the next segment of the show. 888-914-9149, Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call if you want to react to anything you've heard thus far on the Cale Clark Show. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. So I stayed up way too late last night watching the thrilling conclusion to the NFL's regular season Sunday night game between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Los Angeles Chargers. It's still hard not to say San Diego. But this was essentially a playoff game because in three teams, their fate hung in the balance last night in Las Vegas because with respect to the Raiders and the Chargers, they're playing each other. Whoever won that game would be assured of a playoff spot. Whoever lost that game would be out. But a tie, and they're both in. And that would also mean the Pittsburgh Steelers would go home, would not be in the playoffs. So the Steelers were in as long as it wasn't a tie. Okay, if it was a tie, then the Chargers and Raiders were both going to the playoffs and the Steelers would go home. Okay, that's hopefully as clear as mud. But last night, wow, what a game. First of all, that was one of the most exciting games I've ever seen. As Chris Collinsworth, who was calling the game with Al Michaels for NBC, said, if this was a movie, I would have walked out already because it was so improbable. You could not script anything like this. It was unreal. The Chargers, led by their second-year quarterback, Justin Herbert. Man, this guy looked like a young Tom Brady. He led two scoring drives to get this thing into overtime. Led them on a touchdown drive, then converted a two-point conversion, then another drive at the end of the game with triple zeros on the clock, threw a touchdown pass to put this thing into overtime. Unbelievable. I lost track of how many fourth downs he converted in these drives. It was absolutely clutch. It was absolutely clutch. So the game goes to overtime. And you know, it's people are thinking, man, these coaches should maybe just wink at each other across the sideline and say, let's just kind of like run the ball a few times, kill the clock. And if it ends in a tie, we both go to the playoffs. It's risky. If you go for the win, you might lose, right? And then go home. So at any rate, this is what sort of happened in the game. It's tied in overtime. And Las Vegas has the ball. And they start running the ball with less than 2 minutes left in the game. And it looked for all the world like they were going to run out the clock and it would, in fact, be a tie. And they just got to concede the tie. We were all happy. We all go to the playoffs. But then something really funny happened. Chargers coach Brandon Staley called a timeout with 38 seconds left. This is what Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth had to say about this on NBC. Check this out.
This will be a 30-second timeout.
What?
Yeah, I think the Raiders were playing to get it down to either a field goal or just let the clock run out, and the Chargers took the timeout.
I'm trying to process this myself.
I know.
Okay, so these guys were completely confused by this. The Raiders had run the ball two straight times with Josh Jacobs right after the two-minute warning. And it looked like, let's put it this way, they weren't exactly moving to the line of scrimmage with a sense of urgency, the Raiders. It looked like they were going to maybe run the ball one more time, let the clock run out. And this thing ends in a tie. Both of these teams go to the playoffs. But then Brandon Staley decides to call time out and stop the clock. And then after that, well, the Raiders do kick a field goal by Daniel Carlson, a 47-yarder. They win the game. The Chargers go home. And, of course, everybody was questioning Brandon Staley. Let's put it this way. Los Angeles fans were not exactly saying, let's go Brandon after this. And that wasn't even necessarily the most boneheaded call that he made in that game. In the first half, near the beginning of the game, he goes for it. He has the Chargers go for it on 4th-and-1 on their own 18-yard line instead of punting the ball away. They don't make it. Las Vegas gets a field goal out of that one. Who knows? Maybe the thing never goes to overtime. If this doesn't happen, you never know. You never know. But this was a head-scratcher, to be sure. I don't know. I don't know about this. But what would you have done, Lucas?
not call a timeout.
Yeah, I gotta tell you that. I got to tell you here, they were, I don't know, some people say, you know, the Raiders were still going to try to go for the winning field goal, and I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows what would have happened, but... But anyways, having said that, Pittsburgh and Steeler fans are super happy that the game did not end in a tie. Obviously, they are still alive. So I think it's time for us now. It's time for us to make our playoff picks. Now we've got the regular season's over. Super Wild Card Weekend is coming up next weekend. So we're going to see if we're prophets here. The team here on the Cale Clark Show, we're going to go through the matchups. I'm going to give my picks. Producer Lucas is going to give his picks. And Patrick Alog, who is a huge Raider fan from SoCal, he is on cloud nine today. He was insufferable coming into the office today, I'm told, just screaming at the top of his lungs, dressed in silver and black. He's got face paint on. All right, so speaking of the Raiders, they will play in the first playoff game against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's Saturday at 4:30, all times Eastern. All times Eastern. Caveat there, 4:30 p.m. I'm going to go with the Bengals here. I'm going to go with the Bengals. Sorry, Patrick. Sorry, Raider fans. I like the Raiders, but I got to tell you, I think Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, are going to be too... They're just too explosive on offense. I see Cincinnati getting over on them. What do you think, Lucas?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Cincinnati's going to take it. They've been playing really well, and the Raiders, Bengals.
Okay. All right, well, Patrick, obviously, Raider fan as he is, representing, he is going with the Raiders on that one. Second game, the Saturday night game. This is the third time, and we'll see if it's a charm or not. The Patriots playing the Bills, being a big Bills fan. Of course, I am picking the Bills by a billion, but I gotta say I'm afraid of this game. I'm afraid of the Patriots. Bill Belichick is gonna have this team prepared. This is the third time that they played each other this year, and it worries me. But I still do think the Bills are a better team, so I'm going to the Bills. Obviously, gotta go with the Bills. But Lucas, what do you say?
I'm gonna go with the Patriots. I'm sorry, but the reason why is because the Patriots just lost to the Dolphins, and I feel like Belichick's just gonna be like, all right, they're gonna come out hard. And I feel like they're just going to take it to the Bills.
Yeah. By the way, I got to ask you, how shocked were you that the Dolphins fired Brian Flores?
I was very startled. I thought he deserved at least one more year, but what do I know?
Hey, the Dolphins continue to make you cry, Lucas, just like Tootie sang about. And Patrick is going with the Bills. Patrick, obviously, for technical reasons, can't join us on air, but he is picking the Bills. All right, let's go to the Sunday games. The defending champs, Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are playing the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going with the Bucs. They have lost Antonio Brown. Tom Brady's the man in the arena. Antonio Brown is the man out of the arena. He waved goodbye to everybody in New York. He's gone. Chris Godwin's gone. They're down a couple big receivers, but I still think Tom Brady and company get it done on Sunday. What do you think, Lucas?
I actually think the Eagles are going to pull off an upset. That's
fly,
right. 7
Eagles
beaten
fly.
To 2. Yep. I think the Eagles are going to pull off an upset.
Okay. All right. We should poll our listeners too and get like an overall, like on NBC Sports, they have like for Sunday Night Football, they have like America picks the Cowboys, you know, 66% or that. I wonder what the CCS listeners think about this. Anyways, Patrick is going with the Buccaneers as well. Next one, 4:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. The 49ers, who made it into the playoffs by winning their final game with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback, they're going to play the Cowboys, America's team. They like to call themselves America's team. Are they really? I don't know.
No.
Who do you have in this one, Lucas?
I think I'm going to go Niners.
Niners, okay.
Niners, yeah.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to agree with you here. I think San Francisco's on a roll. When they can run, they can hit you in so many different ways on offense. Cowboys are feeling confident after, like, hanging over 50 points on like a bunch of high school players who suited up for the Eagles last week. They're resting all the regulars. Don't get so confident, Cowboys fans. I'm going to go with the Niners as well. And Patrick Alog, for what it's worth, is also picking San Francisco. All right, let's go to the Sunday night game. Steelers-Chiefs, 8:15 p.m. Who you got?
Chiefs.
Mahomes. We're all Chiefs, all three of us. Chiefs, sorry, Ben Roethlisberger, this is going to be your last game. All right, the Monday night game, a rare Monday night playoff game, is going to be between the Arizona Cardinals and the reeling, even though they finished 12-5, the reeling Los Angeles Rams. They just got beat by the Niners. What do you think?
Rams.
You're going to go Rams.
I'm going to go Rams.
Rams tough, huh?
Stafford's going to have a great game. Go Rams.
Rams tough. See, I'm not with you on that. I think Stafford, the recent struggles, he was throwing a lot of interceptions, pick sixes. I don't know. He's never won a playoff game yet. I'm going to go with the Cardinals. Going with the Cardinals. Patrick's going with the Rams. Patrick's going with the Rams. Okay, so now we got to see how these games play out, but that's why they play the games. But I do think we need to make our eventual Super Bowl picks just to be fair about things. I'm going to go with Bills against... I'm going to go with the Packers. I think the Packers were not playing this week because they're the number one seed. I'm going to go with the Bills over the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Oof. Bold call. All right. I'm going to go Titans-Packers in the Super Bowl. And I think the Titans are going to take it.
Derrick Henry comes back. It could be tough if that happens. Patrick has the Bills over Tampa Bay. Good man, Patrick. Take it to Vegas, folks. Place your bets. And we'll see you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.